have Judge Van Bachlen of the Northern District of Indiana sitting with us today. So, our first case for argument is SEC versus BCI. Mr. Cannon.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My name is Greg Cannon. I represent the appellants, BCI Aircraft Leasing and Brian Hulnagel. The matter before the court concerns a civil contempt order entered by the lower court.
So tell us, why are you appealing from a judgment of $5,800?
Well, Your Honor, it's frankly and obviously, as the court is suggesting, not the dollars that is the issue. It's the finding of civil contempt.
Well, why does that bother you?
Well, for one thing, we are engaged in litigation with the SEC, that is BCI and Hulnagel, and the SEC, for example, has already cited the civil contempt finding in pleadings in our case, the case against the SEC, which we consider to be prejudicial. It is harmful to BCI Aircraft and Hulnagel, that finding. It is, as the court is suggesting, not the dollars, needless to say. This civil contempt finding...
If we affirm, it's more harmful.
Well, I guess that's true, Your Honor. We're hoping and arguing that that should not occur. Your Honor, this arose from two subpoenas, Dukas Tecum, issued by the SEC and other litigation the SEC has pending, and was issued, therefore, pursuant to Rule 45 of the Rules of Procedure. The court held BCI in contempt, notwithstanding the fact that the motion, which the court was hearing on September 3, 2008, was a motion styled by the SEC as a motion for rule to show cause against BCI Aircraft and Brian Hulnagel. The relief sought, as stated in the motion, was an order that BCI comply with the subpoenas Dukas Tecum, and that the court issue a show cause order. The hearing, which was noticed by the SEC, not set by the court, stated in the notice of motion that the SEC would appear on September 3rd and seek a hearing date for its motion to show cause. This motion was filed on Thursday afternoon, late afternoon, August 28th, the Labor Day weekend, and was scheduled, therefore, for hearing on Wednesday, September 3rd, barely three business days later. Counsel for BCI and Hulnagel expected and understood that the hearing on September 3rd would be a hearing to schedule a further hearing date and that there would be an order for a response.
Yeah, but why didn't you attend the hearing?
Well,
because what if they'd set a date when you're not there, and then you say, "Oh, we can't make it on that date."
Well, that is something that we could have done, Your Honor.
Well, you should have done it. I mean, it's ridiculous otherwise.
But
how are they going to set a date? How can they set a hearing date in your absence?
Well, we expected they would set a hearing date, and we would comply with that hearing date, Your Honor.
And when the hearing date was? Well, hearing date might be the next day, right?
It might be, Your Honor.
It's a terrible failure on your part.
But we expected.
Ridiculous. Why did I don't understand why you didn't show up.
Well,
some game you're playing?
It was not a game, Your Honor.
Well, why didn't you show up?
As I think the facts will illustrate.
Well, why didn't you show up?
Because we expected it would be a notice in the nature of a setting.
Usual practice?
Well, Your Honor, it was simply our misunderstanding.
It's gotten you in a lot of trouble.
It was our misunderstanding.
Don't move. Well, it was a misunderstanding.
The
notice says you're supposed to show up on a particular date.
Correct. Your Honor, it said that it was a notice to seek a hearing date.
So you ignore hearings when you don't think they're very consequential.
No, Your Honor, we do not ignore hearings.
Well, you did in this case.
What we believed was that it was to seek a hearing date and that there would be a hearing and a response date set. And that is precisely what the lower court did initially that day. It issued an order continuing the hearing to a week later, September 10th, ordering BCI to respond on September 5th. It was exactly the order that was expected, that we would be ordered to respond on a date certain and that a hearing date would be set by the court for an argument on the merits of the motion. And that's the order the court issued that day. We received that order. For reasons that are unclear to us, we do not know how and why this happened. Later in that same day, the court vacated that order and issued an order finding BCI in contempt.
This rule to show cause procedure is found nowhere in the rules of civil procedure, to my knowledge, and I'm not quite sure why it's still in use. And I'm not sure either what the point of a hearing to set a hearing date is.
As far as the rule to show cause, Your Honor, I believe it is in the nature of asking the court to issue an order.
Well, that courts use orders to show cause when they are on their own motion scheduling a hearing for contempt or other sanctions. So it's a device that's used by a court sua sponte, but it should no longer be in use under the modern rules of procedure.
Well, Your Honor, it is in use. My experience has been that motions for rules to show cause in civil contempt proceedings are used. In fact, some of the cases we cited in our brief were cases where show cause orders were issued, the parties responded, and then the court went on to the determination of civil contempt or
what's
not.
What's the point of the hearing? Is there some threshold showing that needs to be made?
I think that is the nature of that process or procedure.
Is there any appellate case law supporting that proposition? Are these all
all I can say, Your Honor, is there are cases where that is the procedure that was followed. The Fisher case in the Eighth Circuit, for example, was a case where the lower court issued a show cause order. The Eighth Circuit there was dealing with the question of whether the subpoenas came under the Rule 34 discovery and Rule 37 motion to compel and ruled that it did not, and then went on to reach the issue under Rule 45. But in that case, a show cause order had been issued.
No, I understand that was the procedure that was used, but I don't recall the Eighth Circuit speaking to the propriety of that procedure.
Yes, Your Honor.
Under the modern rules of civil procedure, when it's a party and not the court that's thinking about going for contempt or some other sanction.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, that is the procedure that's followed. It has been followed in many cases. I think it is in the nature, as the court is suggesting, of requiring a prima facie showing, and then the court would issue a show cause order for a response.
Is it analogous to a temporary injunction proceeding that precedes a preliminary injunction proceeding?
Well, I guess it's a single or ex parte showing by one party.
Right, you've anticipated my question. Can it be done ex parte? And is it usually done ex parte?
I don't know if it's
done in a contested hearing where everybody shows up.
I don't know if it's usually done ex parte. I would rather doubt that. But here, as in many cases that we have seen and cited in our brief, parties file a motion for rule to show cause, and the court then decides, has a prima facie showing been made, issues a show cause order so that the other party may respond on the merits.
But what do you do with Rule 45, which says the issuing court may hold in contempt a person who, having been served, fails without adequate excuse to obey the subpoena?
Well,
what other procedure is required?
Your Honor, I believe the court properly should issue a show cause order.
I don't understand. The rule doesn't require that.
Well, Your Honor, I believe there needs to be a court order issued that in order for a civil contempt finding.
It says a court can hold in contempt a person served who failed without adequate excuse to obey the subpoena. What additional? I don't understand.
Well,
where do you find a requirement of additional process?
Well, here, Your Honor, I don't believe there was process. We were not given an opportunity to even show adequate excuse.
Are you saying this rule was violated, Rule 45?
Your Honor, we believe that Rule 45 requires a court order, not simply a subpoena issued by a party.
It says without adequate excuse to obey the subpoena.
Your Honor, I understand it does say that. I believe under the cases that we've cited in our brief, there needs to be a court order. Requiring compliance.
Those
and
cases are probably wrong, counsel, is what's being suggested here.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Those cases are probably wrong. There's nothing in Rule 45E that requires this rule to show a motion for a rule to show cause why you know, the 45E procedure should not be invoked in this case.
Well,
it doesn't on its face. It's just an old device that no longer has any relevance or applicability under the modern rules. When someone in litigation wants a contempt order in a situation like this, a motion should be filed, a date should be set, and contempt should be litigated without this intermediate layer of process or procedure, which is meaningless.
Even if that were true, Your Honor, we were not given...
If it were true...
We were not given an opportunity to respond on
the
merits to the motion.
There may or may not have been confusion here about the requirement of showing up.
Adequate excuse.
Right.
And what we did, Your Honor, after we received the second order from the court issued on September 3rd, we filed a motion to vacate the next day, the very next day. And because there was confusion, though the court had...
And what's your adequate excuse?
Well, Your Honor, we had been making attempts to comply with both subpoenas. As to the June 30 subpoena, we had obtained an extension of 2 weeks from the SEC, and on July 30 or 31 had produced documents to them. Most of this production, virtually all of it, is in the nature of electronic documents, electronic discovery. We produced a large volume of materials.
Why give them the Excels in PDF form rather than in their, you know, natural state?
Well, primarily, Your Honor, we produced them in TIFF format with concurrence of the SEC because we could then Bates label, number the documents so that we would have a control of what had been produced.
The Excel file is in PDF form. You can't use it.
In native format, we would...
Without the, you know, the information. You can't use the various... you can't use the program.
And when the SEC complained to us about the TIFF format production, they complained about some specific attachments. We agreed to produce those in native format. We made a second production of the materials on August 25th. By that time, the SEC insisted we produce all the materials in native format, though they had agreed, and it's not disputed in their briefs, they had agreed with us during the time we were to respond to the subpoenas that they would be produced in TIFF format. As to the August 6th subpoena, we asked for an extension. We were told on the day the documents were due, though we had been led to believe the extension would be granted, we were told on August 20 they were denying the extension. We produced materials responsive to that subpoena on September 3rd.
Okay, so this is your adequate excuse argument. So what is the standard of review of the judge's determination of whether he had an adequate excuse?
Well, Your Honor, I think the court, this court should review that determination
of
civil contempt.
No, I know we should review it, but what is the standard of review? Is it deferential? Is it de novo?
I think it is de novo, Your Honor.
Why?
It is not deferential. Well, for two reasons. One, Your Honor, from the record, this court can make a de novo determination of adequate excuse. And secondly...
No, but that's not how it works. The clearly erroneous and these other deferential rules apply even when the evidence is entirely documentary.
Secondly, Your Honor, because...
Well, let's finish on first. Is it your notion that any time the evidence is documentary, review is de novo?
No, but I think the nature of the subpoena and the responses of adequate excuse in this case permit the court to make a de novo review.
Look, that's not the standard. Whenever the evidence is completely documentary, a reviewing court could make a determination de novo. But we never do that, and the Supreme Court has made clear we're not permitted to do that.
Well, Your Honor, the alternative here...
Getting the idea that we have power to review the adequate excuse finding de novo.
The alternative here would be, if the court agrees that the order should be vacated, would be to remand to the trial court. Because of what has...
Why should the order be vacated if the excuse is... If the judge found that your excuse is inadequate...
But the court never made that determination, Your Honor. Never made that determination. Struck our brief in response to the motion by the SEC and never made a determination of whether there was adequate excuse or not. That's my point.
Well, that was based on the failure to show up at the hearing.
But... I've explained the confusion about that. There was never a determination of whether adequate excuse had been met. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fannin. Mr. Shiffrin?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Ben Shiffrin for the Securities and Exchange Commission. Your Honors, BCI and Holnagle failed to comply with subpoenas, did not respond to the Commission's motion seeking to hold them in contempt for that failure, or appear at the hearing on the Commission's motion, and were subsequently held in contempt at that hearing.
It wasn't a contempt motion. It was a motion for a rule to show cause why they should not be held in contempt.
Yes, Your Honor. The local rules in the Northern District of Illinois, I think it's 37.1, require that a contempt proceeding be initiated with either a motion for an order to show cause or a notice of motion. In this case, the Commission used both forms.
I only see one.
The first page is the motion for rule to show cause, and the last page on the back is a notice of motion. I believe it's document 119 in the record.
Your notice of motion, though, says that you're seeking a hearing date regarding your motion for a rule to show cause. It doesn't give notice that you're actually pursuing the merits of your contempt.
I believe the notice also says that the Commission would appear to present its motion as well as seek a hearing date. The Commission's intention...
To present your motion for a rule to show cause, indicating that the only thing that's going to happen on that day is that, at worst, for the responding party, a rule to show cause will issue, setting another hearing date at which the merits of the contempt would be litigated. What's wrong with that interpretation?
Well... In addition to the motion, the Commission included a memorandum in support. It specifically included a section, entitled Request for Relief or Request for Remedies. And in that section, the Commission specifically requested that the Court issue an order finding appellants in contempt. And so the Commission stated that it would present its motion, including those requests for relief, at the September 3rd hearing. The Commission expected that it would appear on September 3rd and argue the merits of its motion on that date, and it also included, as required by the local rule...
The question, counsel, is not what the Commission expected. It's what you gave notice of. And your conclusion in that memorandum asks the Court to enter an order requiring BCI and Holnagle to show cause as to why they should not be held in contempt. To show cause, in other words, to bring on the merits later, not now.
Well, as I said, that's the form that the Commission used to initiate the proceeding.
To the notice question here.
I'm sorry?
That's important to the notice question here.
But I believe that if appellants received the documents that the Commission sent them, and appellants admit that they did, they would have had notice that the Commission was seeking to hold them in contempt.
Well, that's clear, but they would not have had notice that the merits would be substantively litigated and decided at that hearing the day after Labor Day. They had noticed that, as I said, at worst, an order to show cause would issue, kicking the can down the road a few days and giving them some additional time to respond to the merits of the contempt issue.
Well, had they appeared, or had they simply called the Court or had local counsel come down, they could have said that they needed more time to respond.
I understand that, but there's a threshold question of what the notice was and the type of notice that it provided them with, and the use of this dual device of a notice of motion, but then the actual motion that's being given notice of is for a rule to show cause, which is an antiquated device that is totally unnecessary under the civil rules of procedure. I don't know why the district court continues to use this device.
That is the device the district court continues to use, and even if the district court thought that there was something wrong with it, it had the opportunity to rectify that when appellants filed their motion to vacate the very next day.
But if I could ask a question, but in fact the first order that Judge Lindbergh issued actually continued the hearing to September 10 in response to September 5, in fact did that. He set a hearing date further, not that day, continued that date. That was entered, and then right behind that is contempt orders entered, and then it's vacated. Why couldn't the better practice have been done what the first order he issued, saying we're going to have a hearing on September the 10th at 9 o'clock and need to file responses by September 5, 2008? What's wrong with that procedure?
The commission believes that that minute order simply reflected the judge's ruling at the September 3rd hearing, which was that appellants had until September 5th to comply with the subpoenas, and that they would report back on September 10th to see if there was compliance.
It doesn't say that.
Well, all it says is that a hearing was held, it was continued to September 10th, and that a response was due from the appellants. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
But your issue that you're presenting to the court is asking that a hearing be held. That's what you're requesting the court to do, present your motion and asking that a hearing be held. I mean, it's 37.1 doesn't apply. This is a Rule 45. And whether everybody's right or wrong, at least the train's moving down this track. And the first thing that happens is he continues the first hearing held and continued to September 10, 2008, 9 o'clock, response due 9/5/2008, which strikes me that it's contemplated at that point there was going to be a hearing and directing appellant to file a response.
But that was after the hearing was held at which he found appellants in contempt. That's why we believe the minute order needs to be read in conjunction with the transcript of the hearing. We understand appellants weren't at the hearing, but at the hearing the commission said it was there to present its motion, including the request for a contempt finding. At that hearing, the judge found appellants in contempt, ordered appellants to comply by September 5th.
Well, why are we spending all this time on this? Because because on September 4th, the appellants filed a motion to vacate the contempt order, right? And then the judge, forgave them the $1,000 a day? So why didn't they have eventually, maybe not in the proper sequence, but didn't they eventually have a chance to make their excuses and ask and have the contempt order lifted?
We think that's exactly correct, Your Honor. Even if the court doesn't believe that appellants received proper notice, we believe that they cannot demonstrate that they were prejudiced.
Well, but why are you still using this contempt finding in other proceedings then if it's meaningless?
I'm sorry?
If the contempt finding, which still remains of record, the judge did not vacate the contempt finding. The judge split the difference and said, well, I'm not going to impose $1,000 a day because you're basically in compliance, but I'm leaving the contempt finding in place. And I'm making you pay attorney's fees, not as much as the SEC wants, but a fraction of that. And the SEC is evidently using this contempt finding as a sword in other proceedings against these parties. And so there is at least some incentive to get it vacated on appeal.
Oh, that's correct.
It's not meaningless.
No. The contempt order still stands. The judge simply found that appellants substantially complied with the September 3rd order, then requiring them to comply by September 5th.
When they asked him to vacate the contempt order, why did he refuse? What did he say?
He said that appellants had proper notice of the motion, that the motion was properly noticed for presentment before the district court in accordance with the local rules, and that appellant's failure to appear was inexplicable.
So it's the failure to appear that's the contempt.
The contempt is the failure to comply with the subpoenas. The commission supported the motion for contempt with a declaration in accordance with the...
So, I see. And so they didn't appear, and... okay, so they didn't comply with the subpoena, and they didn't appear at a hearing. So that's the basis of the judge's finding?
Because the commission included a declaration that established that appellants had failed to comply with the subpoenas. And appellants had the opportunity in their motion to vacate or at the hearings.
Let me ask you another question. This is along the lines of Judge Sykes. So what is it you're using this contempt finding to do to them that has made them file this expensive appeal from a $5,800 judgment?
The litigation against this litigation against Hyatt, but also the commission's litigation against BCI and Hohlnagel continues. And I believe at various points when BCI and Hohlnagel have the obligation to produce documents, the commission brings it to the court's attention that they've already been held in contempt for a failure to comply with subpoenas.
You're before a different judge in that other litigation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Who might not know this litigation history is the material point.
That's true, but the it's in the same district, it's in the same northern district of Illinois.
Well, let me ask one question. If you'd had the hearing, and I know I'm beating a dead horse a little bit, but if you'd had the hearing on the 10th of September, we most likely wouldn't have been here. I mean, they would have had an opportunity to say whatever they're going to say. Judge Lindberg would have issued, based on that, whatever order is going to issue on why they didn't comply with your subpoena, and that would be done. I have the same concern. It seems like we waste a lot of time getting to this point where if you had that hearing on the 10th of September, you wouldn't have gone down those roads. It had been over one way or the other.
The appellants could have said that they needed more time and could remove the hearing to September 10th. The commission noticed the hearing for September 3rd, and appellants at least had noticed that the commission was going to appear on September 3rd. But
that's not the question that's being asked, counsel. The question that's being asked is why didn't the court get at the merits of the good faith defense that these responding parties wanted to offer for their alleged noncompliance with the subpoena? And my understanding of the record is that the judge declined to even entertain that because he had entered the order a few days, the contempt finding a few days earlier, based on their non-appearance at the hearing. Is that how it went?
They fail to appear. The judge issues the contempt order on September 3rd, that same day. The next day, appellants file their motion to vacate.
Right.
And a few days later, the court denies that motion.
But without entertaining the underlying merits of their good faith defense, he denied the motion, saying, you should have been here a couple days ago. You weren't, so I'm not even getting to the merits of your good faith defense. And so as Judge Van Bocklin is suggesting, we might not be here if he had entertained those merits.
Well, I think
did you object to that? And,
we opposed the motion to vacate.
But on the substantive merits or simply because of this procedural anomaly?
Because of the procedure. And I believe that the good faith argument that you're referring to was that they thought that under the procedure they didn't have to appear on September 3rd. And I believe what the judge says in the denial of the motion to vacate is that he said the failure to appear was inexplicable.
I'm referring to their defense to your claim that they were not complying with the subpoena. You know, their defense was we're complying in good faith, we're doing the best we can, but you know, the merits of that were never litigated, right?
Oh, I understand, Your Honor.
The merits of the contempt issue is the heart of the matter.
But the commission's point is that appellants have never brought to the court's attention, either in the motion to vacate or in their opening before this court, what evidence they were deprived of bringing to the district court's attention that would demonstrate that they were in compliance with the subpoenas by the return dates.
So it's a harmless error argument, that all of these errors were harmless because they haven't told us what they would have said if they had been given proper notice and a proper hearing.
If the court finds that there was error, we believe the error was harmless because they cannot demonstrate, or they have not shown to the court how they could demonstrate that they were in fact in compliance with the subpoenas.
Well, is the basis of the judge's contempt order that they failed without excuse to attend the hearing, or that they failed to comply with the subpoena?
That they failed to comply with the subpoenas. The commission's motion was supported by a declaration of a commission accountant which showed that appellants had failed to comply with the subpoenas.
And if that was the judge's ground on September 3rd, shouldn't the defendant have the opportunity to say, no, we didn't comply with the subpoenas, but we had an adequate excuse? Shouldn't they have had a chance to, at some point, to argue that?
We think that they did in their motion to vacate.
Yes, but I thought the judge wouldn't listen to them.
The judge received the motion and simply ruled that that appellant should have appeared at the hearing.
No, that's a separate issue. They're two separate issues. Of course they should have appeared at the hearing. That was a bad mistake on their part. And he could sanction them for that. But you say the judge also found that they didn't comply with the subpoenas. That's what you use in your other proceeding, to whack them over the head. And they had an opportunity to present evidence of their adequate excuse. They did that. But did the judge make a ruling about the adequacy of their excuse? Or did he say, because you didn't attend the hearing, I'm not going to listen to anything you say about why you didn't comply with the subpoenas?
Well, the judge definitely does just say that they didn't appear, and so he's going to deny the motion to vacate. But in the motion, the appellants are simply saying that they complied by September 3rd, and they're giving forth the reasons why they didn't think they needed to produce these documents until September 3rd. Okay. It's really not until their reply brief to this court that they come forth with arguments why they didn't need to produce the documents that they eventually produced by the return dates of the subpoenas.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Schifrin. So, Mr. Kanin, how much time do you have?
I think I used my time, but may I make one?
Well, you have a minute, actually. You didn't use your time.
I do want to make just one rebuttal comment. We did file a response on the merits of the contempt issue on September 5th in accordance with the court's first order of September 3rd, in which we did recite in detail the basis for our adequate excuse defense and the reasons why we felt we had been making good faith efforts to comply with the subpoenas. That response was struck by the court as moot that day. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, he's angry at you because you didn't show up at the hearing.
I agree, Your Honor.
Well, you should have shown up at the hearing.
I agree. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument.